With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to a new edition of the Terry's Talking Podcast. I'm David Campbell, sports manager at Cleveland.com and host. And alongside, as always, Terry Pluto, award-winning columnist from The Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com. How you doing, Terry?
I am well, David.
Good. What did you think of the Super Bowl? And what did you do for the Super Bowl, more importantly?
Not much. I actually didn't watch every single second of it. My wife and I went out to eat, and then we went back and watched a little bit of it. I mean, the nice thing, it was a fun game to watch. And I know you mentioned you'd ask about the call. I wouldn't have called that, whether it's the fourth quarter or the first quarter, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
So tell me why.
I just thought, yeah, grabbed them a little bit, but it didn't seem like much compared to some of the other stuff. But maybe that's me.
So, all right. It's funny because I was talking about this during the game with my family. We were watching. So I'm like a hockey referee. And whenever I get grief about a call like that, I'm like, all right, well, did you have your hand up there? And they say yes. And I said, did you gain an advantage? And they will say no. And then I will say, well, why did you have your hand up there? Like, yeah, you're making it hard on me to do the job. And if James Bradbury says he shouldn't have done it, like, to me, that I felt like the refs made the right call there. And, their job is to make sure that the Chiefs have a chance to score there. So sorry, Terry, go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, I mean, everything you said is correct. I mean, it probably was pass interference, but there's a lot of things like holding and everything else that go on in every play. And the question is, how much of an advantage did that really give the defender? That's how I kind of look at it. Officiating, whether you're talking hockey, basketball, anything where there's called a contact, it's a lot more art than science. You know, when you're doing the hockey games yourself, you're not going by quote unquote the book and the rote, and it's a feel for the game. At least the good officials, I think, are that. And so that's the only reason there. And it's correct. I remember there was a game where Amari Cooper got called for offensive pass interference. He pushed off a little bit, and yes, it's correct. But if you really looked at it, I looked at that thing a couple times. I don't know how much of an advantage you really gained. Yeah, both guys are running down. They're running fast. You know, a big difference with those receivers and defensive backs is they're isolated. So it's actually easier to see all that goes on compared to everything everywhere else in football.
So you're in the camp of, like, you have to pick your spots there, and that's such an important part of the game that maybe you don't throw the flag there. And
no, even more than that, I just thought it was really mild. It was a mild infraction. It's kind of like going 70 to 65. I'm serious. That's how I viewed it. I mean, and if they start pulling everybody over on that, you're going to have a lot of cars on the side of the road, and you're going to have a lot of flags in your football field.
And on your driving record, too. So
yes, it is.
All right, Terry, let's move on to the talk of Cleveland these days, the Red Hot Cavaliers. 38-22 overall. They're the number four seed in the East, and they're one game behind the Sixers for third place, 4.5 behind the Celtics. The Cavs have not lost in the month of February, Terry, 7 straight wins. What are you seeing from this team right now that is leading to this streak? And just the, even last night against San Antonio, a really not good opponent. The Cavs didn't bring their A game, and they still found a way to win, which really says something, because they probably would not have won that one a year ago. But what are you seeing from this team?
Or even earlier in the season, they had a couple of games like that where they played weak teams and kind of played down to the level of the competition. And then when they try to wake up from their slumber, they were yawning too much to get back in the game. First of all, it's a remarkable streak, because this time of year, really when the calendar almost turns to February, these guys are thinking all-star break and trips to the Bahamas or whatever they're going to do. Because remember, they live in a whole other world. I mean, these guys are not just flying coach somewhere. You know, they're going to be chartering planes. You know, three or four guys get together with their families and off they go. So, and there, you get into that mindset. And then secondly, it's a time of the year where you just don't particularly feel like playing a lot of defense. You've been doing it for a whole long, you know, long stretch. And then when you come back and come into March towards April, you start thinking really playoff positioning. And while we're talking about playoff positioning, I don't think it feels like it that much to the players till the last 20 games. So the fact that they're playing like the playoffs matter, and they're playing like even when they're tired, they're trying to be fresh. And it's just really impressive to me. And Mitchell was not at his best in several of those games in there, and they won anyway, which, of course, I liked it because that meant it was more team ball, with the ball going to the big men more often. You see Mobley's game keep expanding, and you see Jared Allen making his usual two out of every three shots he takes. And Okoro is fitting in so well with the others. I mean, now they already score 6 pointers or whatever. It's not a fantasy league. You know, this is not that. It's not prop betting. It's how is your team playing overall? How does he fit? So it's exciting, and it shows that JB really has their attention.
And so, Terry, last week the Cavs didn't make a move at the trade deadline, but they are bringing in Danny Green, veteran,
mm-hmm.
lots of playoff experience. And you were just talking about fit, and not only does Danny Green give the Cavs what they need on the floor, but a big reason they went so hard after him after he was bought out by the Rockets is that they think he fits in the locker room. And that's a huge part of what this was, wasn't it?
Yes, and also defensively, he's pretty good. Now, we'll see. He's coming off a significant knee injury. So we'll see how he's, you know, and you need your legs for your shot. So we'll see how he's shooting the ball, how he's defending. But it's a, you know, basketball-wise, cap-wise, it's a bargain. It's a $2 million one-year deal. If the knee shot, you let him go. Frankly, if it's, we go into April 1st, he's still not doing well, you don't have to play him. It is the perfect move because you give up nothing. You get a chance to have something that's very important to you, and there's really no downside to it. I remember when they had him in here the first time, and as a rookie, I liked him. He was a four-year player at North Carolina, and he could shoot some, and you could just tell he had a chance to be pretty good. And, of course, they just didn't embrace him at all. He was a second round pick. He gets let go, plays a little in the G League, and of course the Spurs pick him up, and he ends up bouncing from good team to good team because of what he does. So that was their move, and along with getting Rubio back, and that's an important part of it, even when he's not making shots, just because when he goes down and he puts his hand up for the ball, they throw it to him. Notice that.
Mm-hmm.
That's an important thing because he could feel the rhythm of the game changing. And a lot of times he's looking to get those big guys involved, where the younger guards, it's just like, we'll run all the way down there. Let's get up a shot, or we'll let me throw a lob. Some kind of, you know, they're in high adrenaline plays where he'd really always talk about the steady heartbeat. And Rubio brings that to the game. His shots right now looking really bad. I mean, I don't know whether that's a result of the knee or just not playing, but I really don't care for that 15 or 20 minutes he's on the court, because you have some stats on that.
Yeah. And just, I'm kind of grouping Danny Green and Ricky Rubio together in my head a little bit, mm-hmm. because I think what the Cavs are really trying to do, when you talk about setting the table for the playoff run here, we've talked many times, and it's been written a lot about how this entire starting lineup is 26 or younger. And now you've got Kevin Love, you've got Ricky Rubio, and now Danny Green. Here's three guys who know what the playoffs are about. When things get really rocky and you've gone five possessions without scoring in game 5 of a series, you got three guys who can say like, hey, you know what? It's all right. Like, here's what we're going to do. And we've seen Rubio do this a ton this mm-hmm. season. I mean, we've talked about his plus minus being one of the best for the number of minutes, but Ashley Bastock, one of our colleagues, wrote a story the other night over the weekend. He didn't score a point the other night, but still had such a huge impact on the game. And I think that's something that the Cavs are really going to benefit from, is having Danny Green, Ricky Rubio, guys who've been around long enough to know what the playoffs are about. I mean, I think Chris Fedor had a stat in one of his stories that Danny Green has been in 165 playoff games, yeah. and the entire Cavs roster has been in 215, and that includes Kevin Love. So you're bringing mm-hmm. in a guy with 165 games. So I think that's going to be pretty important, right?
And the nice thing is Rubio played with Mitchell in Utah, so they came in with a relationship. Because as great as Mitchell has been, and he's been a great player for them, he still often shoots too often from three-point range. Because I'm just saying that when the alternative is him going to the basket, and he just about either gets fouled, scores, or scores and gets fouled. He can get to the rim anytime he wants. That's what Mike Fratello, I remember, told me the day they made the deal. He can get to the rim anytime he wants. And I'm like, okay. But even if there's two guys, he's so strong. Usually he draws a foul, or it should have been a foul. It may not be called. And that's a good thing where I think Rubio could say, hey, Donovan, just take him to the rim. Take him to the rim. And that's what they need more. To do that, to put some pressure on them, because if they get into too much of those three pointers and they're not making them, then suddenly other teams running down the court, the pace is faster than they want to play, and they lose their big men in the process. And I know that sounds like old school basketball. Fine. It works pretty well for this team.
Yeah. Geez. If there's an old school team in the NBA, this yeah. is it, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. The way they play, the way they're built. So, Terry, really big game in terms of the NBA landscape tomorrow night. I know it's the last game before the All-Star break, but the Cavs are playing Wednesday night at the Sixers at 7:30. And this one is on ESPN. And I kind of have a two-part question for you. Number one, what are you expecting tomorrow night? I do wonder if the Cavs were maybe looking forward to this game. And we're taping this on Tuesday afternoon, but against the Spurs, I wonder if they were looking ahead to this Sixers game a little bit. And then the second part of it, with this one being on ESPN tomorrow night, do you think the Cavs are getting enough national attention for what they're doing? You can't turn on the TV every night without seeing the Brooklyn Nets and the LA Lakers on every night. And the Cavs have only been on a handful of national games. And so, I don't know, it's kind of a two-part question. What do you think about tomorrow night? And then do you think the Cavs are getting enough attention?
Well, in terms of the national attention, the problem is the Cavs are drama-free. ESPN, all of them, they love drama. Kyrie, LeBron, Lakers are a mess. Brooklyn is a mess. How's Kyrie going to be with Dallas? You know, it just sounds like that. And they like the cliffhangers. They like the possibility of not only he's going to be the Dallas, but will Kyrie be with Dallas next year? Oh, will he go to the Lakers? And what about Russell Westbrook? And on and on. That's what they like, where these guys are a real basketball team. Secondly, they're in Cleveland. So they're drama-free playing in Cleveland. My view, and I hear that a lot of times, I don't care what the national media looks at the team that I'm covering when it's really good and the fans here embrace it. Fine, it'll be our toy to play with. And it's the same thing like with the Guardians. This is our toy. I don't need somebody in Bristol, Connecticut at ESPN or someone in the network in New York telling me about my team that I've been watching a lot more than they have. So it will be nice for people to see them in the matchup, and Embiid's given them a hard time over the years. And also, I have to admit, I absolutely hate James Harden's game. I just despise it. He hogs the ball, all that, and I look at the numbers, and they're phenomenal. I mean, they're just phenomenal. He's averaging 21 points. He's shooting 45 from the field, 39 on threes, 11 assists, and 6.5 rebounds. You could say he doesn't defend very well. He doesn't, but those numbers are like, you know, that's like Magic Johnson only or something. It's amazing what you're talking. When you're talking about 6.5 rebounds and nearly 11 assists. You know, Embiid's averaging 33 points. He's shooting 54%, 10 rebounds. They have a player, Maxey's a terrific player for them. Scores a lot off the bench. Tobias Harris is very underrated. And Doc, you know, some people say he's overrated as a coach or whatever. He's still pretty good. And when he's got players that are listening to him, and by the way, they rank fourth in defense, I was looking. So they're good at it, too. It's a great matchup. And this is just so nice. We're talking about Cavs being relevant, having big-time matchups in the East, playoffs looming, making moves to try and be good for the playoffs. They have legitimate stars. I think Darius is playing just so well since the first of the year. He's finally stopped getting hit in the face. I mean, that helps. And he's just so under control. Some of the moves he makes where he goes to the basket, almost flat-footed, and kind of the running one-hander banks him in. Lenny Wilkins played that way, only he was left-handed. Sort of grounded. And it's just such a smart game, knowing all the angles off the boards. I mean, I love the team. I love the way they play. I love the way the coach coaches. Doesn't mean it's a perfect thing, but this is really basketball.
Yeah, it's all true, Terry. I want to ask you, but you mentioned Embiid for a second. You watch that guy, and well, two things on him. Teams send double teams at him, and he splits them and scores anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so weird, like how my mind works whenever I watch him. I think about the Cavs, and the first person I think of is Kendrick Perkins. And like the Cavs brought him in to give them some big foul help. Like he was in there to just muck up the lane and give them six fouls against whatever big they were going against in the playoffs. And do you think the Cavs are built in the playoffs to stop or at least contain somebody like him? Or how do you think how are they going to approach Embiid tomorrow night? And do you think that will give us any clues about how they might do it in the playoffs? They certainly have the 2 7-footers, which is a great start, but he's such a load. How do you see them handling him or trying to?
The problem with that theory of the get the big guy and he'll whack him is that half of the time Embiid's outside the lane. He's taking medium range jumpers. He takes some threes.
True.
He's so athletic. That's why you're probably better off, even though Jared Allen's had a hard time with him. He might be better equipped with Mobley coming over to help than, because if you have some big heavy guy, he's just going to sit stay in the lane and Embiid's going to score a lot from the outside. You know, the only thing that's hurt Embiid ever is injuries. I remember when the Cavs brought him in, he actually hurt his foot in their workouts before that draft. And then already when they were looking at the x-rays, and I can't remember if it was a foot or knee or both, whatever he had, it looked very bad. Because if you look, he hardly played early on. And then the astounding thing, David, is this guy was not that skilled of a basketball player back then. He is now. So as you said, he's a load, but when you're averaging 33 points in the NBA, nobody knows how to guard you. You just don't want him to get. Yeah. You don't want him to get 50. I mean, that's what you don't want.
Well, so you think that the Cavs are actually set up with the way his game has changed, probably as well as anybody to defend him with the way they're built, the 2 7-footers helping coming over.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. All right.
Like, so I can remember they tried this too when they got knocked out. The Cavs got knocked out by Dwight Howard. And I think it was 2009. So they brought in Shaquille O'Neal. I mean, what a joke that was. I'm here to have a ring for the king and all this stuff. And Shaq played like 40 games. He was like 40 pounds overweight. And it didn't work. And so really, you just need to have your best players go after somebody like Embiid. I'm interested to see how Mitchell plays in that game. You know, Mitchell's the one guy. He has played 39 playoff games. He's averaged 28 points in the playoffs for his career. So he has a fairly extensive playoff experience.
All right. Well, Terry, that'll be a good one tomorrow night, Wednesday, Cavs at Sixers. It is on ESPN as well as the local channels. And then it's into All-Star weekend. And coming out of the All-Star weekend, the Cavs won't be back until Thursday, the 23rd of February, when they will host the Denver Nuggets down at the Fieldhouse. And that will be another good one. So anything else on the Cavs, Terry?
You know, you mentioned the Nuggets. We're talking about big guys. And even though he can score in the post, their big guy, Jorgic, the big
Jokic.
Guy they have. Yep. Jokic, yeah. He goes out to the high post, passes great. I mean, he is a combination of old school and new school. And the Nuggets are just a lot of fun to watch. Mike Malone, son of Brandon Malone, excuse me, wonderful young coach. He was here as an assistant for a while. I forgot which regime that was. And it's just good to see that. They're a fun team to watch. I'm just into the NBA because then I'm sitting there watching Popovich coach a 14-44 team. That was their record. 14-44. You know, Pop's going to the Hall of Fame. He's a great coach. But the old, we've talked about this before, and I'll keep going back. You can get bad and stay bad for a long time in the NBA, even if you're coached by Greg Popovich.
I got to tell you, though, Terry, even with that record, that team shows up and they play way. They might not have all the talent in the world, but they still bring it. And he won't settle for anything less. And that's what JB Bickerstaff was talking about. Like, we have our standard, you know, and the Spurs have their standard that they're going to play to in talent or not. And, hey, you know what? I remember when Greg Popovich was in his earlier days with the Spurs and they had David Robinson and Tim Duncan was coming out in the draft and all these reporters were asking him, like, well, you can't take another 7-footer. What are you going to do with the pick? And he kept saying, well, why can't we take another 7-footer and play them both? Mm-hmm. And we all saw what happened there. And they might be the team that ends up with Victor Wembanyama, the French phenom, 7'4", who can do it all. And that'll turn things around real fast. And the standard will still be the standard with Greg Popovich coaching that team.
It will be. But if you don't get something like that, you could just stay bad for a long time. See, that's the interesting thing about what happened here. There was no number one draft pick for the Cavs. Garland was 5. Sexton was an 8. Mobley was 3. Now, Mobley should have been number one, but he was 3. And Allen was picked up in a trade. They made the Mitchell deal. So, yes, they were lottery picks and very good ones because you could mess up in the lottery a lot too. But it just – there wasn't like a Tim Duncan or David Robinson, as you mentioned. It's really phenomenal what happened here when you look at the overall landscape of the NBA.
Well, and as you've written, Terry, it all traces back here to the Allen trade.
Yep.
And then you can trace everything that's happened from that, and it's just been really something to watch come together. So – all right, well, enjoy All-Star Game weekend. It's always fun to watch these guys just out there playing for the joy of it and having a great time. That'll be in Utah this weekend. And then, as we said, the Cavs are home against Denver next Thursday, the 23rd. So, all right, Terry, should we take a break?
Sure.
All right, let's do it. When we come back, we are going to get into some Cleveland State basketball, and we have more emails from our listeners about times they played against notable athletes during their younger days. We'll read some of those. We had some great ones last week and some more good ones this week. And we've got a good Hey Terry question. We're also going to talk about Terry's faith in you, Colin, for this week. So we'll be right back on Terry's Talkin'. All right, we're back on Terry's Talkin'. David Campbell and Terry Pluto. Terry, we were talking about the Super Bowl earlier, and I guess it's always Brown season here, and we've got the combine coming up at the end of the month. The Browns will not have a first-round pick. What do you want to talk about with the Browns?
Well, instead of me answering, you watched the Super Bowl and you thought about the Browns and you thought what? I'm asking you that question.
What do I think about the Browns after watching the Super Bowl? Right? That's what you're asking me?
Yeah. Anything jump out?
I don't think they're that far away from getting there. And I know that's a crazy thing to say, but you look at what both of those teams had. Offensive line that can protect a quarterback. Yes. A quarterback who can make big plays in clutch moments. Yes. A defense. I mean, we don't really know what the defense is going to look like under Jim Schwartz, but do you have playmakers on defense? I mean, Myles Garrett would have been the best defensive player on the field the other day. No doubt about it, right? They've got some really important pieces, and I just think they need better coaching on defense, some accountability on defense, and some more creative flair in the red zone. And I think they're not far away if they can just get a speedy receiver and some defensive line help in free agency. I don't know. Am I crazy?
You're hopeful.
That's going to be my epitaph. Crazy but hopeful.
There's another line to black gospel song, and I forgot who it was. Somebody like Marvin Sapp or something that sent, he sings, "I ain't perfect, but I'm faithful." So there's a faithful Browns hopeful. And it goes under the line of, you know, when I've had players and all that say to me, you don't care whether we win or not. You'd rather just have controversy or whatever that sells papers or get you hits. No, winning would get us a ton of hits and a ton of sale of paper. You get a Browns team at least within sniffing distance of a Super Bowl and watch what happens. And unfortunately, I think unless they have a very long nose, they're not quite that sniffing distance just yet. So, but who knew that with Jalen Hurts and Philadelphia would be able to do that? They would retool like that. And it also goes to show you that, for me, the frustrating part if you're a Browns fan is that the rules are set up that anyone can do it if you do it right.
Well, absolutely. I mean, look what happened. I mean, there's no Tom Brady on this team, but things change quickly in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And Tom Brady goes to the Bucs and they win a Super Bowl, like, right away.
Yeah.
And there are some good players on this team, and I just thought the defensive coaching was so lacking last year that if they get that fixed, it's going to make a huge difference, and it's going to give the offense more opportunities. I'm not saying it will happen. I'm just saying it can happen, and I'm not saying they're going to make the Super Bowl, but I think they could be right there pretty quickly, like in a year or two.
You can go from 7-10 to 10-7. I'll buy that. I'm not going to go anything farther than that, but I was just watching that. Now that turned out to be modern football in terms of how much the scoring was. You know, some of these other playoff games are not. So I just wonder what you thought, because I have to admit, after a while, thinking about the Browns from last season going to this season was so far away, and they haven't made any other moves. My mind becomes numb. I'm serious. I just can't really come up with anything new about them until we go to free agency and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I just thought everything that could have gone wrong last year did. I mean, the fact that they had the 25th ranked run defense in the league, it shouldn't have been that bad. And throwing Deshaun Watson in after 11 games, and it was basically a 6-game preseason, as we've talked about. I just think it was just such a season of transition. They should have won 8 or 9 games. They gave the Jets game away. I'm just thinking in terms of talent and projecting toward the future here. It couldn't have gone any worse, really, if you think about
it. Well, Brissett gave them a lot more than anybody could have anticipated, but it still didn't help. That's always the problem with the Browns. Seriously, the parts are far greater than the whole. And until those pieces sometimes fit together in a more coherent way, we're going to be frustrated. But I am happy about the fact that you can look and see. I mean, Nick Chubb would have been the best running back in that game, for example. Amari Cooper would have been one of the best receivers. As you said, Garrett could have been the best pass rusher. This I meant about the different pieces. The offensive line would not have been embarrassed in that game at all. So I don't know if they could have done anything at all. Both those quarterbacks probably would have thrown 45 points on them, but we'll see if that changes.
Well, that's what the offseason's for, but I do think Jim Schwartz is going to be the most important person in that locker room next year. I think he can elevate everybody's performance. So we'll see. But all right, Terry, let's move on to Cleveland State basketball. You're doing a two-part column this week about Cleveland State, and they are going into a Friday game against Wright State at 7 o'clock down at the Wolstein Center. They're 16-11. They were picked to finish 7th in the Horizon League, and they're 11-5, and they're in second place. Mm-hmm. You have been talking to people there just about what a surprise this has been this season, and Scott Garrett, the AD, was kind of giving you some background on just how it's happened.
Well, when you look at the previous 2 years, I think they were 39-19. They won the Horizon League regular season title both years. Went to the NCAA once, NIT the other time, with Dennis Gase. Then Dennis Gase takes off from Missouri, which I had some Cleveland State fans go, oh, you know, when we get a good coach, you lose one. No, this is the first time in the Division I era a Cleveland State coach has left Cleveland State for a better job. This is actually what happens in other good major programs. They come and they get your coach.
Well, it's so funny. You said you can look it up in your column if you want to look that up. And I did. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. I thought that Gary Waters had left for a better job, but he didn't. You're right.
No, he retired. Yeah, he retired. Yeah. I mean, at least – I mean, granted, he did a good job here. But his last 2 years, Gary struggled when the transfer portal and graduate transfers and all this stuff started to become a big deal. It just was very hard for him to kind of get his mind around that. He lost 20 games each of his last 2 years before he was knocking out 18 to 22 wins. So the question then was for Scott Garrett, okay, we've lost Dennis Gates, and Gates takes two of his top players with him. He takes DeMoy Hodge and takes Troy Gamillion, who are all Horizon League. So who do you get to come in here? And it was, I remember when I first heard they were interviewing this guy, Daniel Robinson, I was like, Daniel who? Of course, I was the same thing with Dennis Gates. Dennis who? You know, just one of these kind of career assistants. And Daniel Robinson seems to have the same kind of touch that Dennis Gates has. In fact, if they could end up with a winning record this year, unless I looked it up incorrectly, I don't think any first-year coach in a Division I time of Cleveland State had a winning record in his first year. So that would be – because usually when there's a coaching change, you know, guys leave and – or you have a coaching change because the team was terrible. So they lost 70% of their scoring. They brought a kid in, Christian Arenuna, and he came – he originally was recruited to play at – he's from the Netherlands. He played on the U.S. only 2 years. Then he was recruited by Kansas, and he was not ready for that. He was there a couple of years, transferred to Iowa State, which is where – Daniel Robinson was an assistant. He was coming off the bench, getting about 5 points a game. Sometimes he started. And then at the end of the season, the head coach at Iowa State told him that you're probably not even going to play as much as you did this past year. Robinson took the job at Cleveland State. He went with them. Well, he's dropped down into the Horizon League. It's not just a matter of dropping lower in class. Remember, this guy was recruited to play Kansas for a reason. That player is finally starting to come out, and he's averaging 15 points and 7. That's been the big game changer for them. And Daniel Robinson is right out of – I'll tell you one thing. Maybe the Browns aren't going to play any defense, but the basketball teams in this town play defense. And they – I mean, he's pounding defense away from them. In the offseason, he had them rolling tires around the soccer field and doing all these other things to get physically stronger. I mean, he's he's old school in one way, but he's got the Dennis Gates flavor for, you know, they have the academics council and they have this council and they've got the guys with their own ideas. So, and by the way, he's mad because the GPA came in at 2.92. The goal was 3, and he's upset about that. And they only had 4 kids on the dean's list. He said we should have more because Gates set that standard of higher. And they want to keep it going. And so, in other words, they didn't do this by bringing in a bunch of blockheads that could play some ball. They really didn't. Gates didn't do it, and this guy hasn't done it. So that's why I love the mid-major level because of stuff like that. You know, we're not talking about NIL money and all those other things.
Well, and you've used this term in your writings about Cleveland State the last couple of years, Terry. It's a place where people go to get opportunity. Like,
yeah,
they never get a chance. You know, they're coaching. They're a longtime assistant, as you said, or they're a player, and maybe they fell out of favor with the coaching staff or they had an injury and they're like, all I need is a chance. And Daniel Robinson, I think, said that in your column.
Yeah.
I needed was a chance. And you bring together a bunch of people who are really wanting to grab that chance, grab that opportunity. And that's what happens. It's really, it really can come together.
Dennis Gates interviewed, I don't know, 3 or 5 times for head coaching jobs and didn't get one anywhere. Daniel Robinson is the same thing. He said at least 3. He's trying to remember how many times he's been rejected, frankly. And they were not – he asked me not to name the schools, but they were mid-major schools. These were not big-time schools. And 22 years, you know, he started at Arkansas Little Rock. He went to Indian Hills Junior College, was hardly recruited out of school. Then he went to Arkansas Little Rock, played fairly well there. Then he was a grad assistant. He lived in the dorm with the players. He mopped the floors. He monitored the study halls. He's not coming out of the Duke, Kentucky, the blue blood coaching line. You know, this guy, Illinois State, Loyola, Chicago, you know, those kind of places. So, and just like Dennis Gates, they got to know each other quite on the junior college coaching runs and everything else. So, hey, my hat's off to Scott Garrett. I think he's found another winner. And boy, that's not easy, because you bring a assistant who's never been a head coach anywhere, you really don't know what you're getting. You don't know.
All right. Well, the Vikings are playing again. Just to recap, they're playing Wright State at Friday on Friday at 7. They're a game behind the leaders in the Horizon. So we'll see how that one goes. So, all right, Terry, you got us off on a very fun tangent a couple weeks ago. We started talking about notable athletes we'd played against in our younger days, and we've been inviting listeners to send in emails about notable people they've played against, and we got some more. We had some really good ones last week and got some more this week. So you ready to run through some of these?
Mm-hmm.
All right. This first one is from Ron Taylor. He's from Powell, Ohio, and he says, first, I love the podcast. Thanks for that, Ron. Being the same age as Terry, we share similar Cleveland memories, have enjoyed all of his books too. Anyway, I was fortunate enough to be a fairly decent athlete in Columbus in the early 70s. Playing for Columbus Brookhaven, I grew up playing Little League with Archie and Ray Griffin. They ended up at Columbus Eastmore, so we then played against each other. But I also played against and guarded Fred Saunders in basketball. He played for Phoenix and Boston in the NBA. I played football against Doug Smith of Columbus Northland. He was a center. He spent 12 or 13 years with the LA Rams and was all pro. Cedric Brown of Columbus Linden. He's got some other ones in here, Terry. ML Harris of Columbus North. And I grew up playing baseball for Coach Chick O'Neill, who played with his sons Mike and Pat while watching their younger brother, Paul O'Neill, grow into the player he became with the Reds and the Yankees. His sister, Molly, was a journalist and writer for the New York Times, food and restaurant writer. Keep up the great work, and I love the show. Thanks for that, Ron. So that's quite a list. That's several. That's some career.
Yeah. Ron. Well, once Sal Bandel passed away, I remember that in the summer I played against Chris Bandel, who, you know, ended up being a big league catcher for a little while, his younger brother. He actually was playing the infield then. He was playing, I think he went to Solon, but I forgot what the summer team was. It was a pretty good one of those. And they converted him to catcher, I believe, in college. And sometimes that's the thing. You go to a guy and say, you know, you want to be in the pros. Can you catch?
We've seen it time and time again through the years. So, all right, Terry, this next one is from Brian Amstutz from Ashland. He says, my senior year at Orville, we played Akron Hoban in basketball at their place. I was tasked with guarding Butch Reynolds, the tremendous 400-meter runner. Luckily, he wasn't as good at basketball as he was at track, but he was still pretty good. As time was running out, the score was tied. We had the ball, and we were trying to run down the clock for the last shot. A teammate tried to pass me the ball, and Butch seemingly came out of nowhere to make the steal and throw down a game-winning dunk as time expired. He was fast. Thanks for that, Brian. You probably run into Butch Reynolds through the years, I'm guessing.
Sure, right? Yeah, you sort of hate facing an Olympic athlete in any other sport, maybe except pool or something like that, where that swimming, I don't know, but if it's anything where you have to run around, I'm going to bet on the Olympic guy.
All right, this next one is from Howard Tuttle. He's from St. Pete Beach, Florida. And Howard says, my brush with a famous athlete happened in the spring of 1967 when members of the Cleveland Stokers, the Stoke City Football Club from Stoke-on-Trent, England, and powerhouse of the English Football League, came to Cleveland to promote the upcoming inaugural season of the United Soccer Association. They were to play at the old Cleveland Stadium beginning in the summer of 1967. Stoke City's goalkeeper was the star of England's recent World Cup championship team, Gordon Banks. The Stokers showed up at our Gates Mills campus for drills and a scrimmage with our varsity soccer team. During one of the heading drills, I was able to sneak one past Mr. Banks, which appeared on the evening on the WEWS 5 o'clock sports report.
Well, there you are.
Howard Tuttle. So, yeah, I didn't think we'd get many soccer ones, but that one is
that's
a good
one. Yeah.
Let's see. This one is from Dave Bauer from Grove Hill, Ohio. He says, I played against a guy named Doug Bear in Little League who pitched for the Reds. You remember him, huh, Terry?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the Cardinals. In our tournament for Little League, we faced them for the championship, and he and I both pitched for our teams. He could hit the ball a long way. And so my brother, who was the coach, had me walk him intentionally every time he came up the bat. Do I have to tell you, he was not happy.
I bet.
The last two times
he
came up.
Did he say this was Little League?
Yeah.
That'll not be allowed.
So Dave says, do I have to tell you that he was not happy? And so the last two times he came up to bat, he just leaned on his bat in the batter's box. it worked because we won the tournament, but I didn't make a friend that day.
No. And Doug Bear probably still remembers it too.
All right. This is the last one we'll get into today. And this one is from Greg Hill. And Greg says he was raised in Stowe and he now lives in Atlanta. He says, "Hey, Terry, in 1981, I was practicing basketball in the university gym on the campus of Rollins College in Winter Park, Florida, where I attended school. I was in the playoffs of my intramural league and I needed some reps on the free throw line. In that day and age, there was nothing that you could attach to the rim that helped the ball come back to you after you shot. So down at the other free throw line, there was a guy doing the same thing I was. So I had the great idea of asking if we could rebound for each other. He agreed. So I said, you get to shoot until you miss, and then we'll switch. It sounded like a great plan. He said I could start first. I started out hot as I hit 8 free throws in a row and was feeling good about myself. He then proceeded to make 119 in a row. Ugh. I know that because I started out counting as I wanted to see if he was going to beat my 8 in a row. Well, his name was Brad Davis, and he ended up playing 15 years in the NBA, 12 with the Mavericks, and was a career 82.8 free throw shooter with a career high of 88.8 in 1984. Needless to say, I didn't do much shooting that day, but it was a cool experience. Wouldn't you know, he was rehabbing an injury and had a home next to the college. Love your podcast."
I wondered why he was there.
Yep. "I love your podcast, guys. And Terry, I absolutely love your columns and have since the late 1980s. So, well, thanks for that, Greg.
Yeah, Brad Davis is good. The remarkable thing when you start hearing somebody just makes 50 or whatever in a row is, don't your arms get tired?
You would think. But
no, I mean, seriously, because, you know, yeah, you could just easily be short or something. So, well, nobody was there to debate it. If he says it was 119 in a row, nobody else was probably in the gym. It probably was.
Yeah. Who was it who set the all-time – oh, my gosh, the guy from The Rock. It's the little guard who I think he set the all-time –
Calvin Murphy, I believe.
Calvin Murphy, that's right. Yeah, so that's up in Calvin Murphy territory there when you're when you're making over 100 in a row. So, well, thanks for all those letters, everybody. If you like – we're going to keep this going. If we get some more in, we'll continue to read them. You can email those to us at sports@cleveland.com. And we will try and include them on an upcoming podcast. So
what are our Hey Terry questions? So let's go to those.
All right. Do you want to do those first, or do you want to do your faith column?
Let's stick with the Hey Terry questions.
We'll go to the Hey Terry questions. All right. Yeah. We have one here, and this one is from Larry Dukes, and he's from Charlotte, North Carolina. He says, "Hey Terry, I've read your columns for many years and appreciate your professionalism with Cleveland sports and sharing your faith. I lived in Cleveland through 2005, and then my family and I migrated to Charlotte. I've always been a Browns and Indians and Guardians fan and Cavs. My question is, I'm very happy with the Browns hiring of Jim Schwartz as the defensive coordinator, since I feel that with the timing of the current roster, Kevin Stefanski has about 2 years to produce a winner in Cleveland. Will Schwartz's defensive schemes using the wide nine concept and adding new players be enough to turn the Browns around? I love the 3-4 defensive line, but I realize that the Browns have the guys not suited to that alignment. My 3 sons and I go to Browns backers events in Charlotte and are diehard fans. I look forward to a culture of winning in my lifetime. Thanks, Terry, for the excellent articles and insights for all these years." So
I have two questions for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have two questions for you, David. Is there any other kind of Browns fan besides a diehard Browns fan?
They are all the diehard type.
They always describe themselves as that.
Yep.
And then secondly, when we talk about lifetime, exactly how many decades does our dear reader plan to live?
I don't know, but we could ask him. We'll find out.
Those are things that come up when I'm speaking at different places.
Yeah.
And I'll say, well, you know, okay, my lifetime. I'm like, well, how long do you plan to live? My mom, by the way, Melva Hardison, the 97-year-old African-American lady, my mom. Today, Valentine's Day, is birthday number 97 for her.
Wow. Congratulations.
So we still did our walk around the nursing home there, and when she's like the star in their thing, and had her balloon. Everybody's giving her happy birthday balloons. She was just hoping nobody would shoot them down. And so that was we had a nice morning with that.
Is she a diehard Browns fan?
She could care less about the Browns.
There you go. It's perfect. There's nobody in between. You're either all in or you're not.
No, so. She could care less. So she likes the Cavs, and she's a LeBron fan, because remember, she is the one LeBron's grandmother did her hair.
That's right.
At the house. That was a story there.
So, Terry, I was talking about Jim Schwartz earlier. How do you feel, and do you think the Jim Schwartz era will be a success in Cleveland?
Well, this is one of those, if it doesn't work with him, then you really have to wonder, like, what are you doing? I'm serious. Is the roster really that poorly constructed? Is there something else going on here that's causing problems? Because I cannot think of a coordinator that came in here with more hype or a bigger reputation. You know, Lindy Infante back in the 80s as an offensive coordinator, maybe, but that's it. I mean, nothing else pops to mind, at least for me. And so that's, I think it's a possibility that he can do a lot. By the way, we did over the weekend, I did a kind of hate Terry Brown's questions, and a guy said he's worried about backup quarterbacks, which actually is sort of fun. It's always fun about that. So did you see my pick for who the Browns should get for their backup quarterback?
I read it, but I don't remember. Who was it?
Gardner Minshew.
Yes.
Because, I mean, Jacoby's going to get a job somewhere, I think, as a starter. And, yeah, Gardner Minshew, who's stuck behind Jalen Hurts. By the way, he played a lot against the Browns. Remember when the scrimmages they had with the Eagles? I didn't know they were going to the Super Bowl. I came out of there, and I remember I was telling a couple of people, they look pretty good, Philadelphia, because at that point, I think they kind of did they creep into the playoffs last year? I can't remember, but they were like 9-8 or something. Nobody was talking about anything like this. And Minshew played quite a bit and looked excellent. Now, maybe we go back and look in retrospect, so did a lot of other quarterbacks, including Joe Flacco. So, but I liked Minshew going back to Jacksonville. You know, kind of a Jacoby Brissett guy. His record is a losing record, but the stats are there. And I think I want a legitimate backup quarterback, Dave. I don't want Garrett Gilbert or somebody. You know, I want a real quarterback because I don't know, will Watson get hurt or what? I just like a guy back there that has a clue.
Yeah, and some experience too. And mm-hmm. He is an unrestricted free agent. So the Browns are obviously they don't have all their draft capital as they would usually have because of the Watson trade. So that's someone I'm sure they'll be looking at. So. All right, Terry, do you have a book recommendation this week? What have you been reading?
A book recommendation. So, well, one of the ones, because I've had some people, it's a bad self-plug, it's Vintage Browns. But here's the reason why. Because I've had people, they're down on the Browns and this, and then they go, oh, but yeah, even when they were good, you had the drive, you had the fumble. I'm like, give me a break. That was really good times. And on top of it, they had a lot of good people on those teams. And so, really, I think to get an appreciation of them, whether it's go back and look at some old tapes of those games, not just the drive and the fumble, but some of the other ones, or just read about Bernie and Langhorne and all these Deacon and all these different players, Sipe, that whole 80s era. That is the last time. By the way, the Browns have had back-to-back winning seasons, and they did it with guys that I think people still treasure. And so, granted, I always wanted to sell more books, but I also want people to have a greater appreciation of that part of Browns history.
All right, and you can find all of Terry's books at terrypluto.com, and I know you have some more books on the way that you've been working on, so be adding to your list of accomplishments in the literary world.
Well, that's pretty much it. I never talk about them until they're out because now and then it's kind of like a trade you think you had made and then all of a sudden something happens. So
yeah, there's no paper to be had, for example.
No.
Yeah. So, let's see. I want a couple other plugs here. If you'd like to subscribe to Cleveland.com, we would love to have you helping support journalism. And as I always say, the easiest way to do that is just go to Cleveland.com/Browns and click on the blue banner at the top. You get all kinds of cool stuff. Texting with our reporters who cover the team, a daily newsletter, and that's a good way to get all that stuff. So, and if you want to send us a Hey Terry question or some kind of a tale of you playing against a notable athlete, we'll continue to do those. Just send it to sports@cleveland.com and put Terry's Talking or Hey Terry in the subject line, and we will try and get it on here. So I think that's it, Terry. We good?
In honor of Les Levine, I'm going to say it of all the podcasts we've ever done. This is the most recent.
There we go. A fitting way to end it. We'll catch you all next week on Terry's Talking.